Hello, podcast listener. Did you know that you're a unique kind of person? Because, well, mostly to people that tune into this show, either watch it live or watch the video. There's a whole video section that goes along with the audio feed. If you're interested in doing that, head on over to techdudesgadget.net/live. Otherwise, I want to let you know really quick before the show starts about a quick coupon special that we have going on. If you enter in the code podcast to become an insider, you get a 1 month free trial, no credit card required. Head on over to technewsgadget.net/insiders and use the code podcast to take advantage of your 1 month free trial today. On with the show. Patreon is partnering with Reddit and more coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Yes, I got it this time. I didn't mess it up like I did last time. Welcome to The Latest in Tech News. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick. This is the world's only 3-in-1 daily show on everything tech, gadgets, and gaming news, brought to you by Tech News Gadget. If you're new here, welcome. Feel free to chat with us during a live show. We'd love to hear your thoughts, and make sure that you click that follow button so that you can be notified when we go live. If you're tuning in via the podcast, welcome. Be sure to tap that subscribe button so that you don't miss out on the latest episode, and if you feel so inclined, leave a review or something. Greatly appreciated. But do keep in mind that on a podcast, you're about a day behind, so you really should be joining us live over at mixer.com/technewsgadget. There's like a video that goes along with all of this, so you're missing out on like half of the show. If you're watching a rebroadcast of this show over at Facebook, Twitch, or YouTube, or currently not monitoring chat or it's disabled, feel free to grab a snack and enjoy the show. But keep in mind that you're only going to enjoy this until probably November 7th, at which case we're going to have to determine whether we want to keep rebroadcasting the full show on these three aforementioned platforms or go to segments, in which case it would be the most popular voted segment or the most popular newsworthy item of the day posted in a video format to these three platforms. But we're looking for your input, so feel free to let us know in the live show, in the comments section, send us an email, send us a message on Twitter at TechNewsGadget, or you can join our Discord server where we rant, we have questions, we have answer sessions, we have suggestions, we have conversations that go on both during and after the show. You can visit technewsgadget.net/discord to get your free invite today. And Octavius is letting me know that the queue has been closed. You can no longer enter. Octavius, I told you to clear this message up. I told you. He's my producer. You know, you have an octopus with 8 legs as a producer for this show, and he sits there and does nothing. He doesn't know how to delete his old messages off of the chat screen here and stuff. Oh, crying out. You know, one thing, you could be able to multitask easier. He's difficult to work with at times, but can't really judge him much, because if you can make him mad, he's just gonna change color and then go wah on you, and then I'm gonna have to put him in a cardboard box, and that's usually how that ends. But that being said, the queue for the giveaway that we have going on is still going on. If you play Fortnite and you're interested in some free V-Bucks, I think there's like 2,800 of them we're giving away to be exact, all to one person. Head on over to technewsgadget.net/giveaway before Saturday. Then if you're listening to this anytime after the, what's the day? After the 27th of October in 2018, you're missing out on your chance for winning that. Full details are on that page. Ways to enter. Have at it. Have fun. And you also win an Insiders membership. For those of you listening on the podcast regularly, we appreciate the support so, so much. And we have now reached 41 countries, and obviously the most popular is here in the U.S., but the second most popular is Bangladesh, which is kind of incredible. So, hello to you out there all across the internet and the world. Hope you're enjoying the content. Feel free to comment and let me know what you'd like to see more on the show. We have plenty of ways for you to get in touch with us, and it's a community, so I can't just be the only one talking here. I love to hear feedback from you guys. So, that covers all of that today. Before we can get into the tech news for today, I have to let you guys know we have to cover kind of what went on in history so that we can appreciate the news going forward. That being said, today is October 23rd, 2018. On this day in history, in 1906, Alberto Santos Dumont flew an airplane in the first heavier-than-air flight in Europe at Champs-de-Bagatelle, Paris, France. Some argue he should be credited with the first flight at all, but that's a long controversy and still going on to this day. Also on this day in 1995, a federal judge for the first time authorized a wiretap of a computer network, leading to hacking charges against a young Argentinian for breaking into sensitive U.S. government networks. On this day in 2001, Apple announced their new music player dubbed the iPod. Using the slogan 1,000 songs in your pocket, Steve Jobs introduces this iPod featuring a 5 GB hard drive, FireWire connectivity, and synchronization to iTunes. By using a 1.8-inch drive, the iPod was significantly smaller than competing MP3 players of the time. The FireWire port allowed simultaneous charging and high-speed music synchronization, innovative and a first for its time. At the time, the original iPod only worked with Macintosh computers. However, the popularity of the iPod among Windows users who had a hack of their own so that they could listen to it prompted Apple to release a Windows-compatible version in the second generation of iPods. With the introduction of the iTunes Music Store in June of 2003, the runaway success of the iPod completely changed the landscape of the music and computer, and some would say the smartphone history and industry. Finally, on this day, in 2012, Apple announced the iPad Mini at 7.9 inches. So, now that we've taken a look back in history, let's head on over to the news of today. First up on the docket, for those of you always wondering, well, Patreon is partnering with Reddit. Yep, rumors are true. The promise of Patreon, the membership platform for independent artists and creators, has always been simple. If your fans like your work, they'll pay you for it. No need to throw off cash or from your advertisers or make shady deals with brands. It's just you, your fans, and the stuff you make for them. Patreon has slowly introduced new ways for creators to milk the most out of these fan relationships. They can give subscribers called patrons a peek into their lives behind the scenes with Patreon Lens, a Snapchat dupe specifically for creators. They can host live Q&As with fans on Discord, the voice and text chat app. Now Patreon has another trick up its sleeve. It's announcing an integration with Reddit, aimed at bringing creators closer than ever to the fan networks that support them. There's a couple pictures on stage here. It's kind of interesting. Many of Patreon's 100,000 creators and 2 million patrons already have a presence on Reddit. Fans have made subreddits to discuss episodes of the German talk show, Bergstadt, which relies on funds from fans, or the Patreon-supported podcast Chapo Trap House. The new partnership makes these fan enclaves official, adding a special flair to denote paying Patreons and adding a widget to invite fans to give money. It seemed like a very natural partnership, says Alex Riccomini, Reddit's Director of Business Development and Media Partnerships. We are the community specialist. They are the creator specialist. By teaming up with Reddit, Patreon hopes it can convert more Redditors into patrons, helping them discover, connect to, and financially support creators on the platform. It also hopes to build up the communities that surround these creators, inviting fans to connect to each other and offering a direct line of communication to artists. For those outside of the creator space, a new integration may seem only mildly interesting, but for creators, it could be another reason to resist joining the larger platforms like Facebook and YouTube and to remain within the creator ecosystem that Patreon hopes to reinvent. So I don't know. I wonder if PewDiePie probably has a subreddit going on. He's probably gonna go, ooh, look, Patreon. PewDiePie. He's probably gonna have a whole horror subgenre with subreddit support thing going on. He's probably gonna come out with a game too. I don't know. We'll see with PewDiePie. He has his own interesting way of handling things. When the integration rolls out later this month, creators with existing communities on Reddit can indicate that they have a Patreon, then add a widget to the sidebar of their community. That allows them to capture users who may not know they have a Patreon account so they can start donating. Redditors who have contributed to a creator's Patreon will see Flare, a short bit of text that says patron, show up next to their username. Flare makes it possible to see at a glance which threads or comments come from paying supporters. Later on, these could potentially indicate levels of membership or the length of time someone has been a patron, information that Patreon already makes available to its creators. So it's quite interesting. They had beta testing with new features with a handful of creators. but now it's going to be rolling out more and more. People, there's probably stipulations in terms of how many fans you need to have on certain social media platforms in order to qualify for a subreddit and then therefore qualify for a Patreon type integration thing. I'm sure all that will be explained, but very cool to note if you're a creator. Also in the news today, Facebook didn't want to be left out, so they decided they wanted to roll out a redesigned Messenger app with simplified interface and customizable chat bubbles. Great. Okay, Facebook, here we go. Messenger 4, as Facebook is calling it, will refocus on conversations, making it easier to navigate through the app. Instead of 9 separate chats, I can't read. See, that this is how frustrated I am that they're coming out with a new thing. It's like, you guys just got Messenger finally working, and I feel comfortable with it, and you're gonna go change it again. Ay, ay, ay. Instead of 9 separate tabs, there will be 3 tabs, with conversations quickly accessible through the Chats tab. Quick access to the camera for sharing photos and for video chats is also included in that Chats tab. In the new People tab, Messenger users will be able to find friends, see who is active, and watch people's stories, while the new Discover tab will let users find businesses to get deals, play games, follow news stories, and more. Conversations with people can be customized using color gradients. With color gradients, multiple colors can be used for chat bubbles, and the colors will change as you scroll up and down a conversation, kind of like in a like a little gradient hue type thing. According to Facebook, the new Messenger app will roll out to customers, quote, over the coming weeks, so not everyone will have access to the refreshed design right away. In the near future, Facebook also plans to roll out a dark mode that will cut down on glare from the phone at night. Probably just a black hue and white text and make it easier for you to see at night or something like that. Or maybe they'll have this spooky thing and then the text will automatically disappear and it'll pop out and scare you. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what they have up their sleeve. Probably nothing. They'll probably do it on Instagram. So, there you have it. Messenger 4 coming to a phone near you. Also in the news today, but I'm a little bit behind in catching up with this, Arcade 1-Up is next-level retro gaming with cabinets for Street Fighter and other games. And for those of you wondering, well, you gotta have any pictures to go along with this? Sweetly! Head on over to Mixer.com/TechNewsGadget to watch the live show, but if you happen to miss the live show, you still always have a chance at watching this show. Head on over to TechNewsGadget.net/Insiders and you can unlock your video archives of this and every other show so that you can see the video that goes along with this. Audio is only half the message, I know. We got video for the other half. So, the retro gaming trend is giving us many new ways to spend money, reliving old memories. Systems like the SNES Classic, C64 Mini, and the upcoming PlayStation Classic are currently topping the gift charts as consumers yearn for the good old days. And, Arcade 1-Up didn't want to be left out, and it's actually within like the top 25 top gifts to get for Christmas this year, so let's dig into this a little bit. But now the company Arcade 1-Up is taking the craze to the next level with build-it-yourself home arcade cabinets. Machines are now on sale in retail stores starting at around $300 US. There are several flavors of machines, with each cabinet featuring a handful of iconic arcade titles. Street Fighter, Rampage, Centipede, Asteroids, and Galaga are among the first batch, and I have seen that it is available at Walmart and Amazon and GameStop. Retail stores vary, but if we read on here, keep in mind that after playing with Street Fighter machine, it's total blast. And is it practical? Of course not. Keep in mind you're spending, depending on however many deals you're able to get, maybe $200 to $300 on a machine that has 3, maybe 4 old games, and it'll take up space in a home. It's like an actual box. Like if you went to an arcade place to play video games, it's a box just like that, just like on Wreck-It Ralph. And it costs as much as an Xbox One or a PlayStation 4, so that's obviously the trade-off that you're going. Well, you're probably not here listening to researching for an arcade machine because it's a rational purchase. You want to add pizzazz to your home decor and show off your nerdy side. You're telling yourself that you're not too old to have some fun and whimsy, and besides, it's a statement piece, a work of art to honor an era of the past. Not to mention your friends will think you're cool, so there's that aspect. As you may expect, it's not exactly the same as a real arcade machine. They are about 3/4 of the size, measuring just under 4 feet high. That means you'll be sitting at a stool to play, or you'll need to put it on a riser to lift it up. Arcade 1-Up does not sell both a stool and riser. Oh, Arcade 1-Up does sell both a stool and a riser separately, so there's an option for you. And depending on the model that you get, there are different games included with them. So if you go for Atari Centipede Cabinet, that has Centipede, Millipede, Missile Command, and Crystal Castle. Atari's Asteroids Cabinet has Asteroids Tempest, Major Havoc, and Lunar Lander. Midway's Rampage Cabinet has Rampage, Defender, Joust, and Gauntlet. Capcom's Street Fighter II Cabinet has Street Fighter II Championship Edition, Super Street Fighter II The New Challengers, and Super Street Fighter II Turbo. You can kind of note the trend here. Bandai Namco's Galaga Cabinet has Galaga and Galaxian. And Capcom's Final Fight Cabinet has Final Fight, Ghosts and Goblins, 1944, The Loopmaster, and Strider, coming in spring of 2019. Now, some machines are exclusive to certain retail stores. Best Buy, Home Depot, and Fry's Electronics sell a deluxe edition priced at $400 that includes 12 games in one machine. It also comes with a 12-inch riser, and the cabinet art features both Asteroids and Centipedes. But this article does go on a little bit more, but hey, if you're to buy a real arcade machine yourself, you'd be paying more than $2,000 to pick it up on eBay. So that's a compromise for roughly the $200 to $400 price tag, depending on where you get it and the type of game that you get it. So, there you are. Also in the news today, HP's latest Spectre X360 has a new angular design and 22.5 hours of battery life. For those of you who like looking at laptops and drooling over the different designs that each laptops bring, there you go, here's one to drool over. HP is updating its popular Spectre 360 convertible laptops today. Both the 13 and 15-inch versions are getting a new gem cut design with a more angular look and feel. Oh, I forgot to mention, there's pictures that go along with this, so if you are just listening to the podcast, you're kind of missing out a little bit. The new design also includes a USB-C port that's angled on the edge of the Spectre X360 to improve cable management. As you'd expect, HP is including Intel's latest 8th gen quad-core processors inside the 13-inch Spectre and 6-core options for the larger 15-inch model. The big promise of the new 13-inch Spectre is the world's longest battery life in a quad-core convertible. That's quite the claim, and HP is promising up to 22.5 hours of battery life. I haven't tested it out fully, but even if it manages half of that, it will be a solid battery life. Elsewhere inside, there's up to 16 gigs of RAM, up to 512 gigabytes of solid-state drive storage, and even optional LTE support with Intel's eSIM design. Ooh, pictures. Pictures. They're trying to go for this elegant, curved look. I'm hearing beeping going on. Oh no, what is that noise? Oh no! While the 13.3 inch display looks similar to last year's model, the bezels have been shrunk in all directions slightly. There's still a rather big chin and top bezel though. You'll be able to pick from both a FHD panel or 4K display, and the choice will really depend on whether you value the claimed 22.5 hours of battery life with a 1080p display over a 4K screen and less battery life. Trade-off going on there. It electrically turns off the webcam, so if you want to disable it for privacy reasons when it's not in use. Unlike this model, the display flips over into a tablet more or into a media mode to view video content. The 15-inch model is really designed for photographers, developers, illustrators, and other people who need better CPU and GPU performance. So HP actually switched out AMD's Vega M discrete graphics for NVIDIA card here, which means there are decisions to be made if you're interested in a 15-inch model. You can pick between Intel's latest 8th gen quad-core processors or Intel's 8th gen 6-core processors. So depending on how you want it, both the Spectre 360 13 and 15-inch will be available in November. 13-inch model will start at $1,100 roughly, and a 15-inch price version will be around $1,400. Both devices will be available from HP Online or Best Buy stores in the U.S. Oh, and I had to show off one more final picture. Man, that looks elegant. Really nice, crisp cut edges. and man, I don't know. I kind of want to test it out now, but we'll see. Also, in the tech news world today, more the voice recognition and the Alexas and Cortanas and the Siris and Google Assistants of the world. Well, there might be a reason for Alexa to be afraid. Think Alexa is the voice assistant to beat? Well, you might want to think again. What was your favorite thing today? The author here who wrote this article, which will be linked in the show notes over at technewsgadget.net, said, I heard that question from at least five different Amazon executives last month in Seattle when an online mega retailer introduced us to about a dozen new Alexa gadgets. Well, what jumped out at you? All of it? None of it? I wasn't really sure. I didn't see a new breakout hit like I saw when Amazon first compressed Alexa down into a dot-sized speaker that just cost $50. Instead, I saw a mess of tangents and echo for everything. Alexa throws spaghetti at the wall. Alexa, tell us what stuck. If you happen to hear any crying in the background, it's my newborn daughter. She really can't do anything with her vocal cords. She's either has poop, or she's tired, or she's hungry. One of the three. You know how newborns are, so we'll just ignore the noise in the background and continue on. To be clear, there's already tomato sauce all over the living room. By my account, Amazon has unveiled 21 different Alexa speakers, gadgets, and accessories to date, and that isn't even counting all the Alexa-equipped Fire tablets and Fire TV streamers, nor does it take into account the gluttony of third-party devices not made by Amazon. Alexa is everywhere, and as of this past summer, she's hoarding about 70% of the smart speaker market to herself. With just four speakers in its catalog, Google's 24% remains in a distant second place. But numbers can be misleading. The 24% figure represents a swift uptick for Google, which is still relatively new to the smart speaker game, having only released its own $50 smart speaker a year ago. And unlike the fuzzy FS focus of Alexa's all-over-the-place strategy, Google's lineup of devices, which now features an attractive camera-free smart display called the Home Hub, seems to be zeroing in on what consumers actually want. And that's what the numbers are technically showing here. So what jumped out at them last month? More than anything, Amazon might be getting a little bit anxious. See, there's good reason Amazon should fear Google, and it isn't just because the Home Mini looks cute, still, but it might look cute. It's just that, coupled with stronger sound quality than the last-gen Echo Dot, is likely why a growing number of shoppers started choosing Google over Amazon for that critical first smart speaker purchase. As a result, Google quickly began to gain in Amazon's rearview mirror. So, well, why would that be? Well, keep in mind that, let's see. Well, I was trying to find it here. I have to scroll through the article. The article goes on. The link for this will be in the show notes. But it seems like there have been a lot of improvements in artificial intelligence. Google seems to have a key advantage here moving forward. When it pops up for the Google Home Hub, it actually shows up and then verifies on the display what you actually said, and you can visually confirm it. And then it actually continues on with the voice commands that you have it, whereas with Amazon, all you have is this little blue dot that seems to listen and then turn off, and you're like, well, hopefully it got what I was saying. I don't know. So, Amazon launched the Echo 4 years ago, and there wouldn't be anything else on the market like it until 2 years later when the Google Home Smart Speaker arrived, and yet things feel much, much closer than the market share numbers suggest. Both Amazon and Google have a respectable percentage of customers to themselves. Both have the money and the momentum to keep moving their respective assistants into the mainstream. Both have appealing entry-level smart speakers that cost $50. Both offer attractive touchscreen smart displays. But Google has an edge of its own with the Google Home Max, which offers premium-sounding single-speaker audio that none of Amazon's Echo speakers can yet match. And yet, at the end of the day, it's Google that keeps nibbling into Amazon's market share. And thanks to the Home Hub, the search juggernaut has a chance to take its biggest bite yet as 2018 comes to a close. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you have Google or do you have Amazon smart speakers in your home? I know for us, I think we went with the, well, not me, my parents, I think they went with the Google Home Mini. That was a lot of fun. And playing some games that you can play with like a group setting where you all had to shout out adjectives or nouns or something, and then it actually put together a story and told you the story once you put all the words in its proper place. I forgot what the name for it is, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Time will tell. Heading on over to the gaming industry, we got some Assassin's Creed Odyssey news. Did you know that those painted sculptures in Odyssey are actually true to history? Yeah. When Assassin's Creed Odyssey debuted earlier this month, it received widespread praise for the quality of its world building and narrative. Some historians also say it deserves high marks for its attention to historic detail in recreating ancient Greece. Notably, the game showcases colorfully painted statues, temples, and tombs dotted about this virtual city. And it's true. Contrary to all those pristine, gleaming white marble sculptures that we see all the time in museums, the ones we long thought defined the Western aesthetic of the classical era, Greco-Roman art was awash in color. Art historians have known about this for a while, of course, but the knowledge hasn't really moved beyond the confines of that rarefied world. That might change now that it's a feature in a hugely popular game. The 11th major installment in the popular gaming franchise, Assassin's Creed, takes place in the year 431 BCE, detailing a fictional history of the Peloponnesian War that pitted Athens against Sparta. Ubisoft's development team took its world building so seriously it brought on a historical advisor just to make sure they got those details right. Sure, the team took some liberties here and there, but judging by the response of historians like Emory University classicist Dr. Kira Jones, who's also an avid gamer, did you know that? Did a bang-up job. Hypoallergenic notes, Dr. Jones is among the leaders of a Twitter hashtag for historians to crowdsource information about the details in the new game. And that hashtag is hashtag academic Odyssey. I think they're trying to go for Academic Odyssey with the AC for the Assassin's Creed. So look at the pictures here. I mean, some of the pictures are crazy. You got Delphi here. You have a faithful recreation of the Sicilian treasury. You have a colorfully painted chair inside of the treasury. You have painted details on all over the place. Oh man, a bold jumping fresco from Knossos seen on the walls of Ithaca in game. Statue of Athena inside the Parthenon. The list goes on and on. And Jones was particularly impressed with how closely the game recreates the actual site plans of Delphi and the Acropolis. You can wind your way up Mount Parnassus to Delphi, past the sanctuary of the Athena, Pragna, and Tholos, which is the process of currently being built, all the way up to the theater and temple of Apollo. So it's colors like this on display throughout that has art historians excited about Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And it's kind of this new thing called polychromy. Since at least the Renaissance, it has been assumed that Greco-Roman sculptors deliberately left their works unpainted. The colors had been stripped away by the elements over the centuries, and while there are some still traces visible to the naked eye, the cleaning and restoration process of those that were undertook practically wiped them away. Major excavations in the late 19th century unearthed several clearly painted relics and sculptures at the Acropolis, among other sites, which should have really settled the matter. By then, however, white marble had become a symbol of the pure neoclassical aesthetic, so the fact that polychromy was likely common in ancient Greece met with considerable resistance. Over time, that resistance has weakened in light of the sheer number of painted sculptures and other artifacts that have been excavated. TLDR, let's just say that instead of looking at the sculptures in ancient Greece and saying, well, they just left them blank, maybe they were colored and painted. Just a thought. And a lot more evidence seems to be showing this, and especially when it comes to Assassin's Creed Odyssey, they try to bring light to it in a way that you could do it subliminally in the culture here in Assassin's Creed. So what do you guys think? Did you actually think like, oh man, they messed it up, the statues are supposed to be white, or did you actually go, huh, colored, that's kind of interesting, and then do some research and actually find out that history kind of probably supports that? I don't know, there's probably controversy going on either side. Was it just white marble, or was it actually painted? Let me know in the comment section or on Twitter at TechNewsGadget. Finally, today in the gaming world, there is a new game that's most likely... Oh, and the numbers are going up right now. Holy cow. So on Reddit, on the gaming subreddit, there was a post by this individual who said something along the lines of, for the past 3.5 years, I've worked on this game part-time as a hobby. Today, I finally quit my job to work on this game full-time. And this game is called Monster Sanctuary. It's currently on Kickstarter. It was supposed to receive $22,000 as a goal, by November 22nd, it just surpassed it. It's at $35,000 right now. So which means the game that it is going to be made public. It's actually it's a very interesting toss-up, and I can see this one person who probably has a crew of people working on it now did an amazing job. This is like monster taming with like turn-based skill and Metroidvania all mashed into one, and we're gonna be playing the trailer for you guys and maybe reading a little bit about it just to get you guys all excited about it, because I don't know, I found this pretty impressive. One person did a lot of all of this stuff in his part time for 3 years. Now keep in mind, this game won't be coming out until, what was this, October of 2020, but we'll cover that. Let's watch the trailer first. So there you have it, Monster Sanctuary. It is a monster-taming RPG with a party-based combat and Metroidvania-like exploration. New monsters provide additional strategic options to combat and allow you to overcome obstacles to explore new areas and find hidden treasures. The turn-based combat focuses on team synergy and combos, distinguishing Monster Sanctuary from other popular monster-collecting games. Now, keep in mind, a demo is available. Earlier this year, they published the first demo. They're happy it gained a lot of popularity, generating many Let's Plays and even some fan art. From this first release demo, we gathered feedback, improved on it, and added some new features. As a special release for the Kickstarter campaign, you may now play the second demo of Monster Sanctuary. It contains 2+ hours of story content, 15+ monsters, and the Infinity Arena Challenge Mode. It looks like it's available on Steam and Game Jolt. Here's a little bit of the story. As the youngest heir of an ancient bloodline of proud monster keepers, you step out into the world to follow in your ancestors' footsteps. You'll gather a party of monsters to grow and train. Meanwhile, a series of unsettling events worries the experienced keepers of the Monster Sanctuary. This is the beginning of a journey to unravel the cause of a mystery that threatens the peace between humans and monsters. So, if you're into that kind of game, I don't know, it looks really well done. It almost looks as good, well done as lot of other games, and this is that side-to-side game. I don't know, it's quite impressive. One person did this. They probably have a team now. I'm very impressed. I'd actually really like to probably play this game or get an interview on it at the very least. Let me know. Actually, here's what I will say. If you want me to do an exclusive interview with this person or play the game, let me know. I will try to do my best to get in touch with them. You can either let me know on Twitter or in the Discord server or in live chat. I will certainly make every attempt to do so. Probably shouldn't be too hard considering. But, yeah, there you go. Monster Sanctuary. So, that will do it for today's episode. By the way, if we happen to miss something on the show or there's something that you want us to keep you informed on, be sure to let us know in either the live chat or on our Discord server. Don't forget to redeem your code over at technewsgadget.net/insiders. That will do it for this episode of The Latest in Tech News. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick. For the latest in tech, gadgets, and gaming news, head on over to technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.